The Saudi Arabian Grand Prix was run this morning in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. Another Max Verstappen win. We follow the sport now much more than before globally, thanks in no small part to the Netflix series Drive to Survive. The Red Bull Formula One racing team has again begun this year's series well with two Max Verstappen wins. But the team is, as you know, embroiled in controversy at the moment over the Christian Horner saga, with new accusations regarding his behaviour towards a female colleague in the magazine Business F1, and the female employee now suspended. Whether the telegenic boss of the team stays or goes to reappear at the helm of another team in due course, it's all up in the air. But the sport itself goes from strength to strength, even in this era of climate change mitigation. Speed has glamour, and so have the drivers prepared to go at 350 k's an hour around the racetracks of the world. And the sport gets safer as the speeds increase. In what's referred to as the disastrous decade of the 1960s, numerous drivers died while racing. It took a one-man crusade by three-time world champion Jackie Stewart to change that. He pushed for full-face helmets, better seatbelts, better emergency response. Statistically, when you raced in Formula One 50, 60 years ago, you had 5 years on average before you were due to be killed or badly injured. And out of all the top drivers from that era, Jackie Stewart is the only survivor. The oldest living Formula One champion. He was the best of his time. He dominated like Hamilton or Verstappen. He was up with the best from any era. And he won the New Zealand Grand Prix when he came out here. His good mate George Harrison wrote a song about him. Faster than a bullet from a gun. The Master of Going Faster, the new documentary about his career called Stewart, isn't just about going faster. Jackie and his wife Helen epitomised the glamour of the sport 50 years ago.
Hail to King Jackie. Will you welcome, please, Mr. Jackie Stewart?
People that you were meeting, the Beatles, the Stones, Frank Sinatra,
that was a dream.
And although Sir Jackie Stewart, as he is now, still goes to the track, there are greater priorities in his life. Lady Helen has dementia, and fighting that disease has become Jackie Stewart's new crusade, his last crusade. We spoke to him ahead of the race this morning.
Well, good morning. It's nice to hear somebody from New Zealand again. I love the country. I don't get there nearly enough, but it's great when it's there.
Can I ask you, how is Lady Helen now? I gather the news hasn't been that good in recent times.
Well, I'm afraid it's not any better. Her condition is deteriorating. I don't want to send her to a home, as most people have to, because my motor racing can afford to pay for her to be at home, but to have seven neuro nurses looking after Helen, only two at a time, but 24 hours a day. So Helen is good during the day, can watch television and get everything from it. Sometimes we have guests here and she behaves extremely well. Come 5 o'clock at night, however, and I think this would be true of almost anybody who's living with a loved one, by about 5 o'clock at night, Helen gets very confused. She thinks she's in another house that's not her own. She's very sure about some things and gets very annoyed if we can't give her a good explanation to it. I speak to her on the phone twice a day if I'm on the road. You know, we've been married for more 60 years.
Yeah.
It's a long and happy marriage we have with two lovely boys. They love their mother as well, and we've got 9 grandchildren. It's a very happy family.
I'm very pleased to hear it. You have the Race Against Dementia charity doing splendid work from the sound of it. What does it concentrate on?
Well, for over 70 years, there's been no cure for dementia. I want, with the team of people that we have and the expertise that we have available to us now, I want to find a cure for dementia in my lifetime. It's very sad when you think that today more people die of dementia than any other illness, including cancer. So we've got to find a cure. And I do that by going around the world, meeting a lot of the friends that I know who give us financial support. We're having in the Grand Prix of Australia a big charity event that's going to take place in a week or so's time. We're being very well received because so many people have got the problem. And these same people don't have the resources that I have financially. We've got PhDs in South Africa. We've got them in Australia. We've got them in America. We've got them in many, many countries around the world. So we are breaking new ground. But I have to say the medical world has been very slow in finding a cure for dementia. Nowadays, with cancer, if it's caught at an early stage, can be fine. Two of our family have had cancer, and they're 100% because they were caught early and dealt with. With dementia, that's simply not happening.
Mm. The principles are, so you'll be in Melbourne for the Grand Prix, will you?
I will indeed.
The principles of the charity, the way it's run, are based on what you learned from Formula One, I was reading. Is that right?
We're using Formula One as an example of problem solving. We deal with Red Bull and we deal with McLaren. You know, if there's a problem in a Formula One car, it's fixed like that. The speed of improving performance is like that. It's a good example. We take all of our PhDs to the factory at Red Bull and the headquarters, obviously, also of McLaren. And these nurses are absolutely shocked by the changes that are made so quickly in Formula One. And the car either wins or is higher on the grid or finishes better for points in the World Championship. So motor racing is a very good example for that because they have to act quickly, move fast, and the people involved are just driven to what they want to do. Now, we don't seem to see that to the same extent in the pharmaceutical industry or the medical world itself. I would like to have a cure for dementia before I go.
That is feasible, isn't it? Because we are finding out more and more about the disease. Could it result from a virus? Could it be prevented by better nutrition, exercise? There is a lot of work going on. I think your work is very interesting because of your approach. So it is feasible now that it's in your lifetime that we make a breakthrough.
Well, I'm still waiting for that to happen.
Yeah.
I'm 85 in a short time. I have contacts around the world that I can go to, some of them for reasons of needing more money for more equipment or for more people. And they've been very supportive because so many people are getting the illness today. Winning's everything. I wouldn't be the life I'm living now if it hadn't been for motorsport. I wouldn't be able to support Helen financially for dementia if I hadn't been a racing driver. But that doesn't help the sad family that you will have in New Zealand, many of them. They don't have the financial resources that I have to look after Helen, and they have to try and get somebody to stay in with her every day, and then eventually that's no longer possible. They've got to go to a home. It's a very sad and difficult illness for any family. And I go to, I don't know how many of those homes every year and every month. And I come out almost in tears at every time, just because it's such a sad story that a family are losing their loved ones and they're not even able to stay in their own home.
That's right. Well, we wish you all the very best with Lady Helen. And it's a fantastic, as I said, it's a fantastic initiative. So you still go to a few Grand Prix. You mentioned Red Bull. I suppose I have to ask you about the Red Bull team and Christian Horner, because we're speaking to you before the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, and who knows what will happen on the track. But what effect do you think these accusations he's facing and all the turmoil within the camp will be having on morale and performance?
Well, I haven't been directly involved, so I really can't answer your question very completely. All I know is that Christian Horner, in my mind, that's Jackie Stewart saying, I think is the most talented team principal in the world of motorsport. And he's shown that by the enormous success that Red Bull have had over these many years and still having them. I don't know what the problems are completely, and this, it wouldn't be appropriate for me to discuss that, I don't think, with you now. But I hope it comes over the right way, and I hope it settles itself and they get on to motor racing rather than scandal, if that's what you, if that's what it could be called.
Someone you have talked about in the past is Lewis Hamilton, you know, hoping for an eighth title if he switches, when he switches to Ferrari. How much of his drop-off in performance do you think has been down to the car Mercedes have given him, and how much has been psychological? I thought you might know about that.
Well, all of us, I think, can't be winning all of the time. I was lucky. I saw the reasons for me not to stay in too long. I don't know. He seems to have enough energy and desire to move to another team and get paid a very large amount of money for it, I hope. But nowadays, the Formula is only race in Formula One. And even though there's more Formula One races than there were in my day, I would be doing, I once did 78 crossings of the Atlantic to make more money because of America. They were spending more money in motorsport than they were in Europe. So I did that, and the other drivers followed me in that. So you burn out eventually. Now, Lewis is not burning out, it seems. To go to Ferrari, they'll expect a lot from him, because at the present time, they're struggling to be the Ferrari that they have often been in years past. It'll be a big challenge for him. I can see that. He clearly still loves the business. I can understand that very well. And this is a decision that clearly he's made for himself.
You say in the film, Stuart, that as a driver, you could remove your emotions and be completely neutral as you began a race. And we wonder about Max Verstappen in that respect, staying as cool as a cucumber in the car while his, you know, dad's fighting with Christian Horner. How did you remove emotion? How do drivers do that?
I learned that from my shooting, because before I was a racing driver, I shot for Scotland and then for Great Britain in Olympic trap. And, you know, if I got nervous at the beginning of a big international event and I missed the target because I was over uptight, it was only going to be 190 out of 200. I can't get it back. When you make a mistake in a Formula One car, you can go better for the next two or three corners or the next two or three laps and still be up there up front. I learned a lot from my shooting. Mind management was one of them. And being able to be very remote. I did not want emotion. Remove emotion. Emotion is terrible. Can be shocking for you. Or, on the other hand, be over pleased by what you're doing. Don't do it. Remove emotion. That's what I learned, at least. All of my friends, I have, I think it's 78 benches in my property in England, reminding me of all of those who were my friends, who I raced with all around the world, who holidayed with us, Helen and I, and they're no longer with us. The sport was dangerous in those days, and I decided at that time to change that. It was very unpopular to a lot of people when it happened, but I was president of something called the Grand Prix Drivers Association. And we closed the Nürburgring, we closed Spa-Francorchamps, two of the greatest racetracks in the world. but they wouldn't have enough firefighting equipment. They had no medical facilities in case of a major accident and a whole lot of other elements. The racetracks themselves were no runoff areas as they are today. So we changed that. It wasn't a popular decision by a lot of people. I was given death threats because the Nürburgring was a big economy in the Eifel region of Germany. But we won. And today we see less death in Formula One, certainly, and generally, of course, through the sport of motor racing. Because we've got runoff areas, we've got medical centres now in Formula One, for example, second to none of any sport in the world. So all of that's changed, and there needs to be change. And it's the same in the medical world, in my opinion. I think sport has something to say in that, how quickly we get things done in sport. The medical world, I understand, is an expensive business, but my goodness, it's a simply the biggest business in the world. We've got to kind of give people a better chance. We'll still grow old, we'll still die, but people are dying at an earlier age now, sometimes in the 50s, with dementia. Now, that's a long time to live, and many people live a long time with dementia, and that disturbs families to a terrible extent. And that's why, for example, at the Grand Prix in Australia, we will be raising money for Race Against Dementia to help them in Australia and around the world, not just in Scotland or Switzerland or England. It's a global problem.
As a driver, when you were going into a corner, you saw the corner in slow motion. What a gift. You know, you drove in a kind of, it was almost like a calm and clear intoxication in a way. You are still seeing the world in a different way. This different approach to dementia sounds to the rest of us like a really good idea that, as you say, hasn't been taken up in 70 years. But you were always ahead of your time, weren't you? That's the thing, with safety and motor racing being another paramount example.
I think I was lucky that I had that. But today, all the drivers that we have in a Formula One event have been driving karts since they were 8 years of age and before. And it's karting that then now makes them successful. So we've got to find new ways of doing business. Motor racing is better today than it's ever been before. It's a bigger challenge on a global basis than it's ever had before. And I would like to think that what we're doing in dementia is breaking new ground, but we've got to find a cure for it. That's the most important thing in my life right now. Seeing Helen, my lovely Helen, in such distress is a terrible thing. And as I say again, I'm a little bit luckier than most people. I can have Helen at home. It's a global problem that we have, and we've got to do more than we've done before.
I wonder if your awareness of the need for that is also heightened by what you achieved in motor racing, because you lost 57 friends, I think I read, in your career. And there was a very famous race, the Italian Grand Prix, back in 1969, and you won it by a hair's breadth from Jochen Rindt. He was the only driver who could keep up with you, and he died the next year at Monza. It was terrible what happened to him. So that kind of awareness, that kind of, you know, being given food for thought has been with you a long time, I think.
Yes. Most all of my friends died driving racing cars in that field. You have to, I suppose, I went to more funerals than any other person that I've met. Mm. It was just part of my sport. And here I am with an even bigger challenge. I just hope that we can find that magic that will find a cure for dementia. I've got a nice person in New Zealand called Kiri Takanawa, Dame Kiri Takanawa. She's living in your country. She's a great lady, and she knew Helen very well while she was over here. And I say a hello to her, by the way, and it was her birthday very recently, so happy birthday to Kiri.
You do keep up, don't you? Congratulations on a great film by your son Mark, by the way, the documentary. All the best for Lady Helen's ongoing health and for yours as well, Sir Jackie.
Thank you very much.
Sir Jackie Stewart.